This is KUNC's Colorado Edition. I'm Carly Huckles.
And I'm Erin O'Toole.
Halloween season is finally upon us.
Yay.
So what could be scarier than looking into the elections?
Dun, 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 dun. We are less than 2 weeks out from the November 6th midterms. And if you haven't filled out your ballot yet, you might want to hold off until you finish the episode because we have a lot of great perspective on the candidates. We'll bring the heads of two opposing parties from Larimer and Boulder counties to talk about the candidates for governor.
We'll also meet the candidates vying to be the next state treasurer and maybe get a little more insight as to what that person actually does.
Speaking of spooky things, one of the lesser known things voters will decide next month is who their county coroner will be.
Ooh.
As it turns out, the qualifications for the job are minimal.
My particular opponent has never even touched a dead body. She's 22. She still lives at home with her parents.
We'll have more on what it takes to be a coroner.
Plus, because there are other things going on besides the election.
Sorry, political junkies.
We'll talk about a polar bear couple at the Denver Zoo, and film critic Howie Moshevitz gives us a deeper look at the Denver Film Festival.
But first, the Colorado Secretary of State's office says a website implying that hundreds of thousands of voters were wrongly removed from the rolls in the past decade is misleading. KUNC's Michael DeJoanna reports.
It all started with a tweet. Independent journalist Craig Pallast claimed that 769,000 Colorado voters were purged from the rolls since 2007. Ben Schler, legal and policy manager for Secretary of State Wayne Williams, acknowledged that hundreds of thousands of voter registrations have been canceled over the years. But he said the reasons were routine, such as deaths or people moving out of state.
So for those reasons, there are cancellations, but this website has made it seem like we've gone out and removed a bunch of voters from the rolls all of a sudden, and that's just simply not the case.
Pallast's website is called the Colorado Voter Purge List. It has spaces for people to enter their information to see if their registration was canceled. But Schler said Coloradans instead should visit the state's official site, GoVoteColorado.com, to check their registrations. Michael DeJoanna, KUNC.
Colorado State University students were feeling the burn Wednesday night. That's where Senator Bernie Sanders spoke at a campaign rally on behalf of Democrat Jared Polis. KUNC's Scott Franz was there.
Sanders urged the crowd to elect Polis as state's next governor. But the senator spent most of his half hour at the podium attacking President Donald Trump and advocating for a Medicare for All program.
If Canada could do it, if Germany could do it, if the UK could do it, if Scandinavia could do it, the United States of America can do it as well.
CSU sophomore Miranda Lewis said she liked Bernie's calls for unity.
Our biggest problem right now is that we're so divided, and hearing someone who is so prevalent in the political community talk about how we just need to come together, all of us in this great nation, it just really struck a chord with me.
Sanders also advocated for free tuition at public universities and higher minimum wages across the country. Scott Franz, KUNC.
Now, you've been hearing Scott reporting ahead of the election. He's the newest addition to the KUNC newsroom, so I thought I would drag him into the studio so that we could learn more about him. Welcome, Scott. Tell us a little bit more about your background.
Sure. I spent the last 7 years in Steamboat Springs covering local government there. Learned to ski, lived in an amazing place.
Nice.
You know, my favorite work day was Tuesday when I could go skiing in the morning when no one was really skiing in Steamboat, and then spend the night covering those really exciting city council meetings.
So it was kind of understood where you worked that you were going to be spending part of the day skiing.
Exactly.
Nice.
It's a big part of the job.
So you are going to be taking on the role of our State House reporter, but you're not a stranger certainly to political reporting. Can you talk a little bit about what you've done in the past?
Sure, of course. You know, the Steamboat, just like every other community in Colorado, is greatly affected by what happens at the State House. You know, whether that's transportation policy on I-70, which so many tourists use to get up to Steamboat, or water policy, you know, everything that happens at the Capitol is important to people in Steamboat Springs, people in, you know, rural Colorado. And, you know, I'm very excited about the idea of being at the Capitol when these big decisions are made and being able to walk down the hallway and talk to an elected official about what they're doing to impact the lives in a positive way of so many people. You know, it was a little hard from Steamboat when you wanted to talk to a legislator because you had to pick up the phone and hope that they called you back. And
yeah.
So being in the room when so much is happening, I think, is going to be really exciting and fun.
Yeah. And even before the legislative session starts, you're already doing a lot of coverage for the midterm elections. What are you focusing on right now?
Sure. Right now, we are focused a lot on the governor's race, who's going to be the state's next governor. We have a lot of important issues, ballot measures on transportation, just a lot of big decisions that are happening. I'm just looking forward to election night. I'll be with the Stapleton campaign following results, and that's my biggest focus right now. And I'll look forward to the legislative session starting and, you know, learning where everything is at the Capitol and just bringing listeners the news and, you know, what's important to people. And, this is a job I know that will bring a lot of meaning for me. I've loved covering government for the last 7 years and really focusing on stories that impact people's lives. And I don't take that role lightly. It's, as I approach this role, I don't view myself any differently from an elected official. You know, it's, I feel like I'm a public servant and hope to really keep an eye on the decision makers and bring people inside the Capitol with me.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Looking forward to what you produce.
Thank you.
During this election cycle, it seems you can't escape hearing about the governor's race, including the money spent on ads and mailers and other campaign needs. And it's certainly one of the most expensive races in Colorado's history. But when it comes to the race for state treasurer, the candidates have largely stayed clear of the spotlight. Colorado's current treasurer, Republican Walker Stapleton, is term limited and running for governor. KUNC's Matt Bloom takes a closer look at the two men seeking to replace him.
Dave Young and Brian Watson, two names you may not have heard until now, but one of them will soon be responsible for managing billions of dollars of Colorado's assets.
I'm sitting here on the western slope of Colorado at my family's home, just outside of the town of Olathe.
In a campaign video, Watson, the Republican, is perched on a tree stump.
We literally built this home as a family over 35 years ago. We nailed boards together. We stuffed insulation together.
Since then, he's moved on to bigger projects. He's the CEO of Denver-based North Star Commercial Partners, an investment firm that buys up and restores vacant and distressed buildings across the country. While Watson paints himself as a business-minded political outsider, Democrat Dave Young is banking on his accomplishments during 7 years in the state legislature.
You know, I'm the only elected Democrat in Weld County. The only one.
In a campaign ad, the former math teacher and Greeley resident ticks through a resume of political wins.
More money for schools, banning assault weapon magazines, equal pay for equal work, and a fair chance at the American dream for every Coloradan.
The new treasurer is set to inherit a slate of ongoing challenges. For one, the state's pension fund, the Public Employees Retirement Association, or PERA, is facing a looming multi-billion dollar shortfall. Watson favors raising the retirement age to 67 to help reduce debt. It's an idea the program's board has been hesitant to embrace.
I want to go and take every single board member of PERA out for a cup of coffee or lunch and get to know them as people, regardless of their political affiliation, because this is a people issue and shouldn't be a partisan political issue.
But Young is wary about raising the retirement age. He argues it makes public employee benefits less attractive, which would amplify other problems like the state's teacher shortage.
This is a disaster happening in our state, and if we aren't compensating people in a way that it fills those positions and keeps them in service, they can just drive up the road here from Greeley to go to Cheyenne and make a lot more money, and they're doing it.
Their campaigns have been pretty smooth sailing so far, but Watson has recently faced criticism for his reluctance to step away from his business. At a candidate debate in northern Colorado last week, Young called him out on it.
Because it is a distinct and red flag issue for me that there's a conflict of interest between his private business handling and the role of the treasurer's office.
Watson wasn't given time to respond, so afterwards, I asked him about it.
You know, how do you handle something like that, moving into public office. Yeah.
That is not a conflict of interest for what the state of Colorado invests in. It doesn't buy vacant or distressed commercial real estate assets. And it's something that I can bring my real-world business investment experience to the state treasurer's office to make a positive difference for the people.
Regardless of their differences, both candidates say they want to make the role less partisan and reorganize programs like the Great Colorado Payback, which reunites residents and businesses with lost or forgotten money and property. Dave Young says when done best, a treasurer's work typically flies under the radar.
Kind of the example that I've used to people is if you have a plane flight, you don't want it to be exciting, because what that probably means is that there's something bad happening on the flight. You want a nice, boring flight.
Even so, Brian Watson says the choice of a state treasurer is one of the most important decisions a voter can make.
It may sound like an office you may not, you know, normally know a lot about or care about, but it is a vitally important office for the people of Colorado because it impacts our financial health and well-being and opportunity as a state.
And when it comes to money, recent campaign filings show Watson has raised more than $1 million in contributions and loans. Young has pulled in about $400,000, not nearly as much as the high-profile governor's race, but surely enough to pay attention to. Matt Bloom, KUNC.
All right, hang tight. We have a lot more great stuff to share with you, including a peek at what makes the Denver Film Festival such a worthwhile event.
And have you ever wondered why we elect coroners in Colorado?
I mean, it seems like it shouldn't be a political thing at all, and yet anyone can run and you don't even need to have special training.
We'll get the scoop on that later, but before we get there, more than 30,000 people have signed an online petition to keep the Denver Zoo's polar bears together and move them to a sanctuary. But zoo officials say the effort is misguided. KUNC's Stacey Nick has more.
The petition on the Care 2 site maintains that Cranberry and Lee are close and that separating the bears would harm them. But Denver Zoo spokesman Jake Cubier says people have the wrong idea about this couple, starting with the idea that they're a couple.
They're not bonded. They're not in love. They don't mate for life. And they actually don't like each other about 11 months of the year.
Cranberry and Lee are only together for about a month during breeding season. Although they've been mates for 6 years, they've never produced offspring. Cubier says they're moving them to see if they'll mate with new partners. Stacey Nick, KUNC.
Among the local and statewide ballot questions, Colorado voters will also choose a new governor. With early voting now underway, KUNC's Brian Larson asked Boulder County Democratic Party Chair Ellen Burns and Larimer County Republican Party Chair Bob Moraine for their perspectives on the gubernatorial race.
In the polling that has been done, Democratic Congressman Jared Polis does have an advantage over Republican State Treasurer Walker Stapleton. Bob, why is Stapleton not polling higher? What has he been doing or not doing that's preventing him from doing better?
I think he's done a good job to his base as he goes to the various counties and talks to activists and so on. I think he's done less in the public debates and interviews, which all the voters see. I think there he has not really shown what he wants to do as well. So I think that's why he's lagging a little bit in the polls.
Obviously, the polls can be problematic, especially this close to an election. But Ellen, is this race Jared Polis's to lose?
You know, we've talked about this in the polling. Where we work as a party is, you know, we work hard to the end. Though, as we know, the polls don't close until 7 p.m. on the 6th. I don't think anyone's going to count a win until then.
So unaffiliated voters are probably going to be the ones who decide this race between Stapleton and Polis. They have an advantage over the registration numbers of both Democrats and Republicans. Where do they stand, the unaffiliated voters, in respect to your counties?
In 2016, of our 77,000 active unaffiliated voters, about 46,000 voted Democrat. So that's our focus in Boulder County, is that outreach and that level of success.
Larimer County, we have roughly 65,000 Republicans and 62,000 Democrats, I believe, but we have 96,000 unaffiliated registered voters. Nobody's going to win if you don't, you know, pull the unaffiliated voters in.
Let's talk a little bit about the role of money in this campaign. Jared Polis has dropped about $20 million of his own money so far into his campaign, vastly outspending Walker Stapleton, who also put $1 million of his own money into his campaign. Does this hurt the election process?
I think generally voters are getting tired of so much money in races. Every year we see new records set. It was a surprise that, Obama and Romney, billion-dollar campaigns each and so forth. And now we're finding, $20, $30 million governor races. I think voters are getting tired of seeing that much money in races. The place where it really hurts is the outside money that comes in that nobody knows where it's coming from. The dark money, so to speak. You get these flyers in your mailbox or emails that are coming in or ads on the radio or TV, and it doesn't say Jared Polis or Walker Stapleton. It says some benign-sounding campaign or committee, and people don't know who's really funding that. And so much of it is out-of-state money. So much of it is very, very special interests. People are becoming aware of that. And so I think people are turning off ads, and they're pulling the mail out of the mailbox, and if it looks political, they're just dropping it because they just know people are with money are just going to be sending stuff, and it may not really resonate with their own point of view.
You know, I haven't taken the time, as seems like many have, to look at the personal financial practices of each candidate. I appreciate how seriously Jared's taking this race, and what it means to have a Democratic governor is imperative. Especially a Democratic governor, House, and Senate, if we want to go there. So I appreciate his leadership in setting that as a standard. I think Bob's point on outside money is important and money we don't know. So more importantly is the transparency of the money and that we understand the sources of it. And then as far as communications go, I think that the lack of control that, for example, Stapleton has shown in some of his communications that weren't even, some media outlets have deemed not even airable because of the facts is unfortunate.
I'm curious how much of this resonates with the general voter from a television standpoint, a mailing standpoint, social media. Do they just tune this out?
Well, I'm certain it has an impact. I think it's becoming a decreasing level of impact because people are just tired of it and they don't trust anymore. I think the other aspect is fewer and fewer people are watching traditional television or listening to traditional radio, and so it's harder and harder to actually make that contact. And so you may spend five times the advertising budget you once did just to reach the same number of people you did before because, people are now getting their news online or other places.
What about you, Ellen, in terms of what you're seeing, hearing within Boulder County?
Well, first of all, I want to be very clear that in Boulder County, we don't throw out our paper. We recycle it. So,
thank you for that.
And I think that the people are frustrated, confused. There's so much, like you said, so much information. That's why for over 10 years now, the Boulder County Democratic Party has done a voter guide for all people in Boulder County. This year, we have distributed it to 136,000 registered Democratic and unaffiliated voters. So that's something we've done, and we've gotten a lot of really great feedback for the clarity of messaging, the links to additional information that are available there, really a facts laid out, showing a value proposition, and helping people have a source where they can go to understand both backstory and kind of high level, no extra show and dance going on.
What needs to be done from the gubernatorial candidates between now and Election Day to seal their respective races?
Get out the vote and really encourage the whole ballot so that when Jared becomes governor, he has the full support of a Democratic seniors level staff as well, executive staff.
I wish both candidates would really come forward and say what their policies would really, how it would really impact the state economically. If you're Representative Polis and you want to have universal health care for all, or if you want to have green energy, or whatever you're proposing, how will you pay for it? Similarly, I think Walker Stapleton really needs to point out, again, economically, what the various positions that he has, how it would impact us. He's talked about the trouble with PARA. What will we do to fix it? Why can we not afford to drive oil and gas out of the state? If we believe in renewable energy sources. How are we going to move that direction, and what will we pay for it? Walker said he's all of the above energy. Let's show how we're going to do that.
It's worth noting that Bob Moraine and Ellen Burns had not met one another prior to their meeting in our studios. And despite their different political leanings and amid another tough election cycle, this is how they ended our discussion.
I encourage everyone in Colorado to always be civil, to be respectful of each other's opinions, and to really consider the issues and the candidates from a very broad perspective. And remember that we're neighbors.
Yeah, and we do have a great state.
We do. Absolutely do.
So, thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
For KUNC, I'm Brian Larson.
In counties across the U.S., voters might notice something way down at the bottom of their ballots. Candidates for county coroner. They're in charge of investigating deaths, and they're up for re-election every 4 years. But should we be electing them at all? KUNC's Ray Ellen Bichelle has more.
Imagine medieval England.
Bring out your dead!
Life expectancy was abysmal. The plague was killing people left and right.
Bring out your dead!
Monty Python might be taking it to the extreme here.
I'm not dead!
Yeah, he says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not!
But maybe not by much.
You'll be stone dead in a moment.
Oh, I can't.
This is where and when the people in charge of determining who was legally dead and how they died came to be, a.k.a. the coroner. Coroners, or crowners, were representatives of the king. They were in charge of investigating suspicious deaths and of confiscating people's property sometimes for the monarch. Fast forward about 800 years, and coroners are still around today, right here. And in counties across the U.S., just like it was in medieval England, there aren't a lot of requirements for the position. Basically, you have to have a high school degree and not be a felon. Which is why someone like Sydney Ludwick is on the ballot in Colorado.
I'm the crazy ferret lady.
Yep, Ludwick has 5 ferrets. She's also an environmental activist, a watercolor artist.
And I am running for Douglas County coroner.
She graduated a couple years ago with a degree in biology, and then she was at a countywide gathering of Democrats when she made the decision.
When I saw that they had the coroner position available, I decided I'm going to run for that.
Ludwick's opponent could not be more different. Republican candidate Jill Roman is a board-certified medico-legal death investigator and guesses she's been involved in investigating about 50,000 deaths.
And my particular opponent has never even touched a dead body. She's 22. She still lives at home with her parents.
You might think Roman's a shoo-in for this race, but she's nervous. She says in today's polarized politics, people tend to vote along party lines and don't think too hard about who they're voting for when it comes to something like coroner. It's possible she could lose to Ludwick.
It's heartbreaking. It's heart-wrenching.
So Roman is busy knocking on doors.
I spend pretty much 8 hours a day on Saturday, pretty much 7 or 8 hours a day on Sunday. I do it until it's dark.
Michael Doberson knows all too well what Roman is going through.
Yeah, that was not a pleasant experience.
Doberson was the county coroner in Arapahoe County for about 20 years. He's extremely qualified for the role, a forensic pathologist, a medical doctor, even has a PhD in microbiology. At first, he ran as a Republican, which, taking into account his politics, was odd.
I'm a lifelong Democrat.
But the county was pretty Republican.
And the Arapahoe County leaders said that if I wanted the job, I'd have to become a Republican.
So he did. Eventually, Doberson decided to run as a Democrat anyway. But he says no matter what party he was representing, the opposition would always drum someone up to run against him. Sometimes people with no relevant experience. People like Sidney Ludwick. And that's the problem, he says. This is an important job.
It's been said that as coroners, we write the last chapter in a person's life.
Was that hanging a clear-cut suicide, or might an autopsy show it was actually a murder? Did the old man die of heart disease, or might a toxicology report show that he actually died from taking opioids? Over the years, a lot of states have switched to a new system. Instead of coroners, they have medical examiners. They're appointed rather than elected, and they're trained to be able to do things like autopsies, rather than having to hire someone else to do that work. But that's not the case in counties across the U.S., including in Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho. For the most part, we are still electing coroners.
It's kind of silly that we're still doing something so outdated.
That's Sydney Ludwick. And crazy as it is, one of the things she wants to work on as coroner is to make sure that only people with medical degrees can run for the position.
You want to get elected so that people like you can't get elected again.
For the coroner position, yes. No one's tried to change it before, so I have to take it upon myself to do that.
For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Rael Imbichel.
The Denver Film Festival opens on Halloween, October 31st, and runs through November 11th. This is the 41st edition of the festival. And for KUNC film critic Howie Mofshevitz, who teaches film and television at CU Denver, the festival offers more than enough to keep people interested.
There's also more than what any human being can see. Over 300 films total, counting shorts, and 135 feature-length films from all over the world. I've seen a tiny percentage of what's on the schedule, but here are a few suggestions. I'm tempted to say that only a Polish film has the nerve to follow a bloody suicide with a cut to Ricky Nelson's 1958 recording of the bubblegum song Poor Little Fool. Panic Attack, directed by Pavel Maslona, has revived the kind of sardonic tone that used to be common in Eastern European movies during the Soviet period. Seven stories interweave. Each one of them involves embarrassment and extreme selfishness. On an airplane, a boorish man arrives late to take the window seat. He talks too much and asks annoying questions. Suddenly, the plane shakes and dips. Passengers are terrified. When things settle down, the couple next to him discover that the man has died, but they pretend nothing's happened. In another story, a waiter at a wedding goes into a panic, grabs a cell phone, finds a quiet spot, and calls his mother. His problem is that he's been playing a tense video game at home and fears he will be destroyed. He instructs her on what to do, and the wedding be damned. The other five stories are also funny and horrifying, because we all know that this is us in one way or another. Pity's another film with deeply conflicted tones. It's directed by Greek filmmaker Babis Makritis and co-written by Eftimos Philippou, who also wrote The Lobster and The Killing of a Sacred Deer, both movies made to leave you puzzled. Pity's a film to make your jaw drop. A man's wife lies in a coma in a hospital. Her prospects are not good. Friends and neighbors treat him with what you might expect, pity, and he gets used to the attention and the lovely cakes brought by the neighbor. Then the wife recovers and comes home, but the man tells no one about the good news. Just know that things do not end well. A film from Turkey, The Wild Pear Tree by Nuri Bilge Ceylan, runs for 3 hours and never feels long. A young writer wanders around the small town where he grew up and talks to people about things like work, love, and theology. His conversation about free will with two young imams as they walk along has stunning depth, and it's also good cinema. Finally, Shoplifters by Japanese director Hirokazu Koreeda is an exceptional movie. A bunch of people live in a cramped space somewhere in a city. It looks like a family with a grandmother, parents, and children, but over time it's clear they are not actual relatives. Except for a 40-ish couple, these people have all connected by chance. Early in the picture, two of them find a girl of maybe four shivering in the night cold. She seems abandoned, so they take her in and make her part of what they all refer to as their family. One of the questions that drives the film is what makes a family. Is it blood relations or something else? The movie opens with a father figure giving the young boy a lesson in how to shoplift. It may be illegal and immoral, but it's also a bonding experience, a father and a son doing an activity together, like fishing. Except this is theft. All through this incredibly intimate and kind movie, director Koreeda puts out tough moral questions. And at the end, the possibility the film presents is just what you don't see coming. My basic advice for choosing films in the Denver Film Festival has always been to take chances. Find something you know nothing about and go see it. It may be good, maybe not, but a trip into the unexpected matters, and it's what the festival does best. For KUNC, I'm Howie Mofshevitz.
This has been Colorado Edition. Our show this week was produced by me, Erin O'Toole.
And me, Carly Huckles. News director Catherine Welch contributed to our show, along with editors Brian Larson and Ashley Jeffcoat, who manages digital.
Our intro music is Remember Me by Colorado musician Kalatana. We also heard Tortu Supersonic with Neo Grotesque, Forest Robots, A Path Among the Woods,
Robbie Reverb with Bling Bong, Broke for Free with Nothing Like Captain Crunch and Spellbound, Grow Grotesque by Dr. Turtle, and Your Magic by Soft and Furious. Our outro music is Good Grief by Ryan Little.
If you like what you're hearing, make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe to Colorado Edition at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
And join us next Sunday evening at 9 on KUNC.